Welcome to Indie Insider, presented by Blackshell Media. This is the weekly show where we speak with indie video game developers, publishers, and industry professionals about their projects, their stories, and their advice to others. I'm your host, Logan Schultz, and today on the show, I sit down with David and Brooke Condolora, the couple behind the indie studio Brain and Brain. The two have been traveling across the nation working as farmhands, meeting other developers, and exploring while they develop their new game, Burly Men at Sea, which was just released on mobile and PC last week. We talk at length about their journey, as well as their industry background, their advice for other developers, and their love of Star Trek. Before we get to the interview, however, a couple of quick notes. This show is presented by Blackshell Media, a publishing and marketing firm working to help indie developers reach their goals and new audiences. The company also strives to offer unique, inspiring, and even educational services for developers, publishers, and gamers alike, which is why we get to bring this show to you. Speaking of which, be sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes and other podcast services across the internet, and please leave a review. If you'd like to be a part of the show and share your thoughts, questions, or even request a professional to bring on the podcast, send me an email at logan@blackshellmedia.com or reach out on Twitter at Logan A. Schultz. Finally, special thanks to Brooke and David for joining us on the show, and Benjamin Tiso over at bensound.com for allowing us to use his song, Going Higher, in the show. And now, the founders of Brain and Brain, David and Brooke Condolora. Welcome to Indie Insider. Today, I am talking with David and Brooke Condolora of Brain and Brain. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Been kind of a long day, but I'm happy to be here now talking to you guys.
Likewise.
Yeah, good. Well, let's just get right down into it. Tell me a little bit about you two, because you two are married and you have your own video game company now. Tell me the story.
Yeah, so Brain and Brain formed, I guess, 4 years ago in early 2012. We'd been looking for a creative outlet to pursue together for quite a while. I was working in the movie industry, and Brooke was doing freelance graphic design work. And for whatever reason, even though we played games together all the time and loved them, it never really hit on us to, it never dawned on us to make video games together. We kind of realized that our skill sets were pretty complementary. Brooke was an artist. Even though I was doing filmmaking, I had a bit of a programming background. And so we just decided to make a project for the fun of it, really, just to have something to do together. We released that in 2014. It was our first game. It was called Doggins. And it got some, you know, a little bit of festival and press attention, and Apple featured it on the App Store. It was on iOS and Android. And it did, you know, it did okay. I mean, it wasn't a huge hit, but it did well enough that it made us think, like, there might be something more to this. And so we wanted to continue, especially Brooke. I mean, she was telling me, even if you don't leave your job to do this, I'm gonna do it anyway. So, you know, I didn't have any choice. I had to quit. So I quit my job, and we started making Burly Men at Sea. That was toward the end of 2014. Here we are 2 years later, and the game is out.
Yes. So your game just released last week. Congratulations, by
Thank
the
you.
Way. Let's get into the weeds a little bit in that story, though. How did you guys first meet? How did you guys connect?
So we met in college, you know, like so many people. We got married pretty young. We've been married almost 10 years, and we're just, you know, hitting 30 right now. Again, at the time, like, you know, I was doing filmmaking, she was doing graphic design, but
although we had the same major, we just took different directions.
Yeah, it's funny. Same school, same major, just went different directions with it creatively.
What was the major?
It was called Electronic Media Production. It's kind of a funny name, but it's just like mass communication, basically. So we did a little bit of radio and television, and like I did independent study of short films and tried to make it, because there wasn't a film program at our school. So okay. I just did the sort of the best I could. And then Brooke did like graphic design classes.
Yeah,
on the
I mixed
side.
It with art classes and design. And
Yeah. So it was kind of a catch-all major, but I think that worked out well for us because we learned a little bit about, you know, all aspects of mass media, which I think has served mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned your first game, Doggins. I know there's some inspiration behind that. Can you tell me Tell me about the inspiration for Doggins.
So it was inspired by our dog, Oliver Doggins. So it's just a little point-and-click adventure about a dog who dreams he goes to the moon. Because we used to joke about what he would dream about if he did dream. So because he's always running in his sleep, we figured he was having grand adventures.
Yeah, you know, he would always be like twitching his paws or like kind of chewing little things while sleeping. Or like, what is he dreaming about? And so we came up with what we think might be the answer.
So you two are married. You've been, you know, married, what, almost 10 years now. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
And now you are working together to make games. What is it like to work with your significant other?
It's good. We work together really well. When we disagree on something, we usually argue a bit and then realize, actually, you're kind of right. And then we make the game better for it. And I guess the hardest thing is just to stop thinking about work at the end of the day and actually, like, have fun together and relax a little.
Oh, man, yeah, that is hard. Yeah. You know, we walk our dog at night and we're just talking about whatever we're working on. And yeah. We go on hikes and we talk about whatever we're working on, especially toward the end of development, you know, as we got into, like, you know, total consumption of, you know, 12, 14-hour days or something like that. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge, is just finding time to, like, be normal people with each other. But it's also kind of the fun of it in a way, too. It's just that you always can be batting around creative ideas together because, you know, we're usually together.
And we do just really enjoy games. So some of that is not just because of work stress, but also because it's what we enjoy. So it just comes up in conversation.
So you guys are gamers. That's where, you know, it seems like that is what kind of inspired you to jump into this. Mm-hmm. What are some of your games? What are the games that have inspired, I don't know, your style?
For me, I really love Kentucky Route Zero. Storytelling aspect, and I feel like everything in it is done so well. And then also just, I grew up playing Zelda games, and I love Zelda. And I didn't make a Zelda light game, but I don't know. I still count that as a big inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, our inspirations, especially mine, I guess, come from like adventure games and storytelling games. And so I'm a huge fan of Myst, even though that doesn't really show up in our games either as an influencer. But just creating a world and letting you explore it and inhabit it, I love that about that game. And then all the LucasArts classic adventure games are like my favorite games of all time. Sometimes if someone posts like a screenshot of one on Twitter, I'll just like start going off and researching them all over again just because I love them so much.
Excellent.
So the Monkey Islands and all that kind of stuff.
And we've played some of those together
in recent years,
so that's been fun.
So if I may say so myself, you guys are the epitome of indie video game developers. It just seems like, you know, looking through your stuff, looking through your games, like just making the games you want to make. What are your thoughts on the indie video game scene right now and what indie video games are now that everything has become so accessible through digital distribution?
I think it's fantastic, the accessibility of it, because you've seen so many new ideas or twists on old ideas or fulfillments of, you know, or synthesis between old and new ideas. There's just a lot of new bubbling up. And I hope in some small way, like what we're doing with Burly Minute Sea is part of that. It's also extremely, extremely difficult from a financial perspective. It's a lot easier to be a starving artist in video games than it ever has been, probably. but probably harder than it ever has been for small developers to be able to do it as a full-time, you know, sustainable living. I think that's been really difficult, you know, for us as well. It might look like we're, you know, it's been great. Like we've had opportunities, like Doggins did okay, and then Indie Fund helped back Burly Minute Sea, which made it possible for us to finish this game and make it the quality that we wanted it to be. But it's still a difficult road, you know, ahead of us to continue doing this, which we'd love to do. So yeah, I think it's like, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times might apply. But
sure.
From a gaming perspective, I think like it's never been better. Going to things like PAX and GDC, where, you know, we've been to all these festivals and events over the last year, and just there's always amazing new games around every corner, and I try to get away from our booth as long as I can to go check them out, because that's what's most exciting to me, is games that expand your mind with new gameplay mechanics or twist things just a little bit that and get you thinking in new ways. So there's a lot of that, and that's really exciting to me.
You mentioned Indie Fund in there. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how that played into Barely a Minute Sea?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I left my job in late 2014 to do this full time. And at the time, we had just planned to self-fund Barely a Minute Sea completely. We had a little bit of money saved up from Doggins sales and then also some, you know, savings from work and whatnot. And so we thought, oh, well, we've got this much money. It'll last this long. We'll finish the game in that period of time. And, you know, being indies, we're overly optimistic. And so we got to the end of that period of time and we're like, okay, this isn't going to work. Fortunately, somewhere in the middle of that, while we were still self-funding, a scout from Indie Fund approached us and just said that he'd seen the game and was interested. And he said, if you need funding, let us know. And so we kind of kept in touch and followed up on that and over a period of a few months. And in the end, they accepted the game for funding, which was fantastic. I mean, having that group of people, which is kind of composed of so many of the heavy hitters intellectually and you know, successfully in the indie game industry, having them as kind of mentors or sounding boards, it's not just the financial backing, you know, it's that these people are listening and are able to answer your questions when you need them. And they were really hands-off in the best way possible, I think, because, you know, they were there when we needed them, and at the same time, they didn't try to inject their vision into the game. They don't own the IP. It was a great relationship, mm-hmm. and something we would highly recommend to anyone.
Definitely.
Sure. I mean, that sounds like it was just a fantastic experience for you.
Yeah, and it came at just the right time. And I don't think we would have been able to make the game that we wanted to make if it hadn't come along. So we're very grateful mm-hmm. to them.
Well, before we dive into really talking about Barely a Minute Sea, which I feel like we're getting to, let me ask you about Brain and Brain. It's this company you've made. Where does that name come from?
It's a Star Trek reference. What is the episode title?
Spock's Brain. It's a really terrible episode of Star Trek, the original series. It's like widely regarded as the worst episode of Star Trek of all time.
And it makes us laugh.
Yeah, and these aliens steal Spock's brain so that they can use it as a computer to run their society. And so the whole time, like, Spock is talking in a disembodied computer voice, but his body is like being run by remote control. And the whole plot is they have to get his brain back and put it back in his head. It sounds like a B sci-fi, you know, it's like in Attack of the 50-Foot Woman or something. Like, the plot's that bad.
Yep.
and then at one point, so the alien race is like all these really dumb space alien women. And this one woman goes up to Kirk and the crew of the Enterprise keeps saying, "We need Spock's brain. Give us Spock's brain." And then she gets frustrated eventually. And she's like, "Brain and brain, what are you talking about? What is brain?" And so we just loved that brain and brain quote. And, it, you know, it's that we're two brains left and right, and it just seems to make sense. So we're also big Star Trek nerds, which is why I know all of that.
So you're just sitting around, and you're like, oh, we need a name for this company. Oh, remember that Star Trek episode? That was awful.
Yeah, I don't even...
Why didn't that come to mind? I don't know. Maybe we just watched the episode. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, we've seen it a few times.
All right, fair enough. I would probably name my company after some bad Friends quote or something like that. You know,
the worse, the better. Yeah.
Yep. I gotcha. All right. Let's get to Barely a Minute Sea. Your brand new game just came out last week. Tell me, what is Barely a Minute Sea? Give me the elevator pitch.
So we call it a folktale adventure. It's about these three big bearded guys who go on an adventure at sea and encounter creatures from Scandinavian folklore along the way. It has a branching storyline, and it sort of plays out like a choose-your-own-adventure book.
Okay, all right. It has a very kind of endearing visual aesthetic to it. It just seems like it's kind of adorable. Does that come from the Pixar background? Is that the animation background? What is that?
It comes from my graphic design background.
Okay.
So I guess it's a very minimal style, and it's something I definitely lean toward as a graphic designer. So I did a lot of logo design and websites and stuff before we started to do games, and that definitely inspired the look of this.
So you have this choose-your-own-adventure game. Where does this concept come from? These three burly men with beards and you make your own this really aesthetically endearing choose your own adventure game. Where does that come from?
Well, it was there's a little more Star Trek in there probably, but we'll get to that in a second. But okay. So it was a name before it was a game. We just had been kicking around this name of Burly Men at Sea for a while just because we thought it was funny. So after we finished Doggins, like that was what we were going to do next. Brooke was like, we're just going to make Burly Men at Sea. We don't know what it is yet, but that's what we're going to make. And what, you did some sketches, right? Oh, actually, while we were working on Doggins, you did a sketch of three men with big beards.
Yeah.
I think we were only like a month into Doggins, actually. Yeah. We had just moved to San Francisco. Yeah, so actually it started while we were doing Doggins. I guess I forgot that.
So I started working on the story back then, just kind of working out what it might be and how it might be shaped. And it actually hasn't changed much from that, although it grew a lot. But the structure of it was pretty much the same.
Yeah, and the idea of it being a story that is short enough to finish in one sitting and then you can play multiple times was always there as well. Mm-hmm. That you would get back, you know, finish one playthrough, get back to your village, and then be able to set off again and do new things in a little bit of a persistent world kind of thing. But also having the three characters is a little bit inspired by Star Trek as well. You've got like Kirk, Spock, and McCoy in the original series as kind of like... almost like a person's split personalities, you know, like McCoy is very passionate and focused on humanities and emotion. And then Spock is very logical and scientific. And then Kirk is sort of the amalgamation of the two, you know, those are like his shoulder angels arguing both sides. And then he has to kind of choose the middle way. And there's a little bit of that here because the three characters are all named after their personality traits. You have Steady Beard, Brave Beard, and Hasty Beard. And then you just saying their name, you get an idea of what each one is like and what they might do in any given situation, which also helps give you as a player possibilities on how to play out every scenario. So the game is made up of a bunch of different scenes, and then each scene can go different ways depending on how you play. And so sometimes you might play more of the steady role, you know, making the smart decisions, but sometimes you're more impulsive and hasty. So there's a little bit of that there as well.
All right. You have this concept in place now, based on this drawing, based on Star Trek, of course. There's this pretty interesting story that I keep seeing in your information between the concept and the release, and it appears to be somewhere in that quit your job, let's go, be nomads and wander, and then you come out with this game. Tell me that story.
Okay, well, so... Let's see. So I quit, and then we self-funded for a year, and then so we were living in the San Francisco area, which is, you know, as most people are aware, is one of the most expensive in the country. Not really conducive to indie development, aside from the great community that's there. So you know, year in, we were just like we just were bleeding too much money on rent and expenses, so we need to do something else. And then for a long time, we talked about mostly Brooke pushing us in this direction, wanting to. You know, kind of hit the road and explore the country. And she had wanted to, we both had wanted to try woofing, if you're familiar with that. It's called, well, you say woofing, but it's Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. It's this long acronym. And so what you do is you apply to basically be a part-time farmhand on farms. And it's like 20, 25 hours a week. And in exchange, they give you free room and board. And so we thought, well, what a great way to fund our game. Like, well, we'll have no rent and no grocery bill, and we'll be able to work with our hands half the day and work with our minds the other half, and it'd be like it's a great balance. And so so right before PAX last year, we packed up our apartment and moved out, and like literally the day we moved out, we just drove to Seattle to go to PAX and show the game for, you know, the second time, I think. And then we drove from PAX to Oregon to go work on a farm. So we were on a farm there for just over a month, I think. And we had planned to just keep doing that, just going from farm to farm. There's a lot of them all over the country that are part of this program. But ultimately, like the kind of part-time hours we thought would make the game take twice as long to make, essentially. So we kind of dropped the farm idea, but since we didn't have a apartment anymore and all our stuff was in our car, we thought, well, we might as well just keep going. And so we kind of chased game festivals around the country and would just go to them and then like stay in the area for a month or so and just do vacation rentals. So
or somewhere halfway between.
Yeah, or somewhere right in between the two. So we wouldn't have to like just do one long drive all at once. So through that, we've been able to be like, we made a big oval around the entire country. Even made it to Montreal in Canada and spent like a month in the Rocky Mountains. And now we've been in the Seattle area for a month. So we've been all over, and you can see it all on our website. There's a map that shows every destination we've been and how long we've been there. It's pretty neat to look at.
That's an amazing story. Was it a pretty positive experience for you guys?
Yeah, we loved working on the farm, and we really wished we could keep doing it. We were very disappointed, but...
Yeah, but we've loved the travel, too.
Yeah, I mean, just, I worked a lot, I guess, in the past couple of months, so we haven't been enjoying it as much as before, but it's just, it's neat. It's neat to be able to walk outside in the Rockies and go for a hike at the end of the day and just see so much of the country. We've really found that you can go almost anywhere in the country in it, and each place has its own charm. And I don't know, it's been a very good experience.
And we've interfaced with the game communities in those different areas. So we met up with some developers in Montreal and developers here, and you know, anywhere
Kentucky,
we've been,
Indiana,
Kentucky, right? Yep. So anywhere we've been that we've been able to meet up with developers, we have, which has been awesome. There's just lots of enthusiastic people out there doing great stuff. And then on top of it all, we've been saving money versus having stayed in California. It's been cheaper. So
yeah, it's weird that it's cheaper to travel than to stay in
California. That is weird. Yeah. That's just how expensive San Francisco actually is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really bad. All right. Well, next time you circle the nation, make sure you stop in Iowa and say hello to us.
All right. Yeah, we won't just drive through next time. We'll stop in.
All right. Good. So did that inspire anything in Burly Men at Sea? Do you think any of that really seeped into the game?
I would say so, but not obviously. I think because the game is an exploration of the nature of adventure, it definitely, I think just actively having an adventure ourselves definitely inspired the writing in that. But I guess nothing from, like, the farm or anything showed up, although we do have chickens in the game. Yeah, so it was more of a story influence.
All right, good, cool. Would you recommend woofing, then, to people? Do you still recommend that?
Definitely.
Oh, wholeheartedly. Yeah. I mean, if you find the right farm with good people, it was fantastic. I mean, we just get up this might sound not so good to some people, but for us it was great. We'd get up at 6 or 6:30 in the morning and go feed animals and then have breakfast, do some hours of farm chores, and then work on our game all afternoon. I mean, it was really...
And put the chickens to bed at night.
And then put the chickens to bed at night because they need to be... It's so funny. Like, most of them would be in the coop, you know, already asleep, but then you'd have to, like, round up a few others. But, it was great. It was an awesome balance, and that's what was so nice to us, mm-hmm. was being able to be in nature and in the real world for a while instead of just, you know, 8 or 9 hours slamming away at code or graphics.
Yeah, so if you don't have to work a really crazy schedule on your game, it's definitely worth it.
You heard it here. Go look up woofing. Take a look at it. Okay. So, shifting gears just a little bit. Your game has received some pretty positive response from some fairly big outlets. What has that been like leading up to release and then release? Are you seeing, you know, some bigger attention for it than you did with Doggins?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's night and day, to use a cliche. I mean, Doggins, we kind of labored on in secret almost, you know, and then just threw it out there and hoped people would see it. and, you know, we got some positive press and more than we probably expected. But this has just been, like, crazy for us. To have Time Magazine email us and ask for a code, they weren't on our radar at all. But then they published a fantastic review, gave it 5 out of 5. And that was amazing. That was the first review, actually, of Burly Men at Sea we read on release day. And it floored us and continues to. So, and it, you know, to even just have people like you contacting us and talking to us, that was, I think we've seen a lot of growth, just in the interest and in who we've been able to talk to, and that's been really exciting. And it's blown us away.
What has the response been like since release? You mentioned the Time review, but across the board, have things been pretty positive?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think press has been more positive than we expected, honestly. We got a nice review from Rock Paper Shotgun and Pocket Gamer and some other outlets. And, you know, it's a weird game. and it's like, it's not quite an adventure game because there's no puzzles. It's not quite a visual novel because you're, like, you're moving characters around and interacting a lot more than you would. It's somewhere in between, and it's really focused heavily on storytelling. It's like a choose your own adventure thing, so it's just very different. And, you know, there have been some high-profile games in the last couple of years, not that we're high-profile, but there have been some that have not had great reception because of their lack of gameness or something weird like that. And, you know, I think we were a little bit afraid of falling into that category for press, and that hasn't been the case. Like, people have been, most people have really gotten it and understood what we were going for, and that's been really, really exciting. And, we're just excited.
Have you been able to hear from the gamers at all? Are you hearing from people other than press?
Yeah. And most of that's been really good too. It's been weird though, because this is the first time we're on so many different platforms. Doggins was just iOS and Android, mostly because of, I guess, naivete and the engine we chose. But now we're on PC and Mac as well. So the game's on Steam and other PC outlets as well as iOS and Android. And so just seeing the difference in response from each audience has been very interesting.
Yeah.
It hasn't been what you might expect. You know, I think we have more, there's been more of a positive reaction on Steam than iOS, and we kind of expected the opposite. We were kind of afraid of what PC gamers would think, but we thought, oh, mobile gamers will love something like this.
It seems like on iOS, people aren't as receptive to a storytelling game, but on Steam, definitely, and of course, Itch is perfect for our sort of game.
For this sort of game, But yeah, that really surprised us. Because iOS and, you know, mobile in general has just been, it's been flooded with like casual little puzzle games, things that don't have, things that are very focused on like light kind of mindless gameplay that you just play when you need a few minutes to do something. I don't know, maybe the expectations of the audience have changed. I'm not really sure, but it really surprised us.
That is an interesting perspective on it, yeah. You hit on it just a little bit, but I want to see if you have any more input. What has your approach been to marketing your own game? Has it been a lot of heavy lifting, or did you find that a lot of people came to you for this?
I think a little of both. We've definitely done, we've sent a lot of emails in the past week. but yeah, I mean, we've had people come to us as well. We've really enjoyed seeing people streaming the game. That's been really great. We didn't know if our kind of game was good for that or what, but it seems like people really enjoy it on Twitch and YouTube.
We've had more people come to us than I would have expected. But yeah, we've sent like hundreds, I mean, literally, of press copies out. But so we've done a lot of legwork, and we didn't have any budget for like hiring someone for PR or anything like that. So we've done a lot of legwork. so many YouTube and streaming people have contacted us. A lot of them from outside the country, which is really great because, you know, we didn't really have the time or expertise to like find foreign outlets to contact, even though the game's localized. We localized into 8 languages. So we want people in other countries to know about it, but we didn't really have the time or budget to like let them know that it exists. So it's been great that streamers and YouTube people from other countries have contacted us.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because, you know, obviously a lot of aspiring indie developers listen to this podcast. And I think that your game comes from a unique place where it seems to be a mix of you having to push and promote your own game, but also people seem interested in it and are reaching out to you. And I was kind of wondering a bit on what that process has been like. So I appreciate the input on it.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just give advice, I mean, you know, we're not huge successes, but if I could give a little bit of advice on it, I guess the thing that's helped us a lot is we've built on what we did previously. You know, we made some press contacts when we did Doggins, and so we've built on those. We made some storefront contacts when we released that. We've built on those. So I think a lot of the success with reaching some of the bigger press outlets has just come from having built a little bit of a relationship with different journalists and storefronts over the years, and we've kept in touch. But also a lot of it's just been, you know, looking for outlets that have covered like adventure or storytelling games and finding journalists who might be interested in it and just cold emailing in a polite, brief way, which is usually gets a decent reaction. I think brief would be my biggest advice. Be as brief as possible and like don't pester people.
And another thing that has really helped, I think, is being part of the Indie Mega Booth a few times with this game.
Definitely.
We definitely met a lot of Twitch streamers there. And YouTube as well.
Yeah, and some key press people.
And a lot of those people signed up for our press list up front, and then some of them found us later. And yeah, that's, I think, definitely be part of the Indie Mega Booth if you get the chance.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, guys, congratulations on the release of your game. It sounds like it's already getting some fantastic response. You guys have put a lot into this, so sincerely, congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks, yeah.
You came up with the, or at least began the story of Burly Men at Sea while you were working on Doggins. Are you already starting to play around with some new ideas for future projects?
Oh, yes. In fact, I think in the nights leading into release day, I was awake planning a couple of new projects. But yeah, we've got several
ideas. Yeah, there's a bunch of ideas we have. We just hope we have the business acumen to make them. So, you know, we're just thinking about the future and how to make that happen. But yeah, we've got a couple of bigger ideas and then a couple small ones as well. So
yeah,
we'd like to maybe get a small one out there and then a bigger one if we can't.
Although that's what we said last time.
Yeah.
Burly Men at Sea was definitely a bigger one.
We'd like to get it to be less than 2 years per project. I don't know if we can do that, but that would be nice.
Yeah, it'd be more sustainable.
Anyway. Yeah, right.
Sure. Maybe take another trip in there too. Is that on the books right now?
Well, we're still fully traveling. I mean, we don't have a home still, so that's the other thing to figure out. I'm saying, like, okay, well, the game was a big project. The next project is to figure out where we're going to live. But, you know, we're still working on that.
We've talked about wolfing again. So we'll see if we do that in between.
There's a great reindeer farm in Alaska we found. Man. That would be awesome. So
that's a story right there.
In the Aleutian Islands.
Yeah. But there might not be internet, so I don't know.
Yeah, there's not.
All right. Go off the grid for a little bit, come back, you have your game, your reindeer Alaska game. That's great. All right. Well, you've shared a lot of advice already and a lot of very insightful things. Do you have any other advice that you would be willing to share with, you know, some others out there? Things that you've garnered from your years of experience and from the process of Burly Men at Sea?
I got something, Michael. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing I would say is just ship a game. So many people start stuff and then don't finish it because either they don't think it'll be marketable or they just, you know, let it drop off the map, whatever. I just think the most important thing to do is to put something out there, because that's how you start building relationships and an audience and all those other things that you can build on for the future. I don't know if it originated with him, but there's a famous Steve Jobs quote where he said, "Real artists ship." And I think that's absolutely true. And I also just read today on Ron Gilbert's blog, he was talking about how so many indies just keep adding stuff to their games and don't finish, and you need a date that you can't move so that you just get the thing out there. And I think that's really, really important. If we hadn't shipped Doggins, I don't think, you know, this game would have been able to reach the level of success with press and an audience that it had. And even though Doggins wasn't a big hit, so, you know, you got to start somewhere. So I think the sooner you ship a game and keep doing that, the better. There's so much to learn. And a lot of it you don't learn until you actually get something out there. So whatever it takes, ship your game. That's my biggest advice.
I guess I would just add to find an indie community to be part of, because that's been a huge encouragement to us along the way. We've met really cool people all across the continent and the world. And there's a community in most
areas.
Yeah,
they're not just in big cities. Like, yeah, even if you're in a small place.
You'd be surprised. So definitely, that's my advice.
I like it a lot. David, Brooke, thank you both so much for coming on. You, audience, have been listening to Indie Insider, presented by Black Shell Media. Of course, Black Shell Media is an indie video game publishing and marketing firm out there to help make great games with great developers. And of course, I'm your host, Logan Schultz. You can find me, Logan, at blackshellmedia.com. Email me if you have any thoughts or questions, or you want to have somebody on the show. Shoot me that email. You can find me on Twitter at Logan A. Schultz. David and Brooke, Brain and Brain, where do people find you on the interwebs?
So the best place to go would probably be just to start at burlymenatsea.com. And you can find links to the game there and also to our studio. And then we're on Twitter. It's a little complicated, but it's brain_and_brain. Brain and Brain was already taken. Probably another Star Trek fan.
It was.
So yeah, feel free to send us a message. Get in touch.
And if people want to check out Burly Men at Sea, where do they go?
Burlymenatsea.com, or if you have a mobile device, just search the app stores for Burly Men at Sea. And it's also on Steam, the Humble Store, and itch.io.
Excellent. I also was on Steam, and I noticed you have a Burly Men at Sea Maestro Beard Edition that is on sale right now.
We highly recommend the soundtrack, yeah.
That, of course, is the game plus the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Really, really quickly, tell me a little bit about the soundtrack, because I actually enjoyed it a lot.
So, yeah, the soundtrack is composed by these guys called Plaid Sound. They're based out of Chicago, and we're their first video game. They were members of what was our favorite band in college. And so when we started the project, we just thought, hey, wouldn't it be great if that band did our music? And so we contacted them, and they were fantastic to work with. And actually,
super creative.
Yeah, super creative. They used, like, Scandinavian folk instruments and stuff. The music's really fun. But also they did the sound design in the game. So all the sound in the game is them doing vocalizations. So like the chickens or doors opening and closing or the fire or wind, everything is them doing it with their mouths somehow. So they did amazing sound and music, and we highly recommend them. Plaid Sound.
That is impressive. What was the band in college?
It was called Anathallo. A-N-A-T-H-A-L-L-O. Kind of like a Arcade Fire they were compared to a lot. Like, they were a bigger group, like 8 people.
Okay.
Kind of like a marching band-ish with rock and Japanese elements. Really crazy, but really fun.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm chatting too much. You guys are fun to talk to. So thank you guys for being on the show. I really do appreciate it. When your next game comes out, we'll definitely have you back.
Awesome. Thank you
so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, make sure you check back next week for another episode of Indie Insider, Monday, every week, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, on iTunes, on Google Play. We'll see you next week.